Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hello and welcome to What Most People Think, Breaking News. Obviously, having a few adverts here and there on the podcast enables me to drop in with the extra ones this week. And I've got to tell you this week, if you wanted an on-brand version for this podcast or for me, I am recording this. Having done one of the Jeremy Vine shows on Friday morning, I've booked myself into the Travelodge Farringdon. One of the better Travelodges, I'd say. Underrated. And I've booked myself in there just for a couple of hours. Then I'm off to do another thing. But because I know, right, that all I need to do this is a laptop and a microphone. And I'm looking out the window at those fucking idiots at the Crown Plaza over the road. I'm paying, what is it, 70 notes to be in there? They're what 130? I don't know. I'm just speculating. But this is a solid hotel. So I'm coming to you from the bowels of... do you know what? This Farringdon one, I've stayed here a lot, actually. And all right, I wasn't necessarily going to say this. This is the third time on the spin that I've had room 312. I think if you're getting the same room at a Travelodge, it's either shows that you've crossed some sort of threshold in terms of profile, or that maybe your life is not going the way you'd hoped. But listen, it's the breaking news. And the reason I'm doing that is because I had a brilliant chat with Catherine Ryan. Thanks for all the positive feedback about this week. But loads of news broke straight after that. So it's kind of Trumpy won by a landslide in the first caucus. So I want to speak about Trump and why I think it's definitely going to be Trump who wins against Biden. There's also a lot of domestic politics to clear up. You know, there was the Rwanda vote, 30p Lee Anderson resigning as deputy chairman, which did seem like a massive shock. And then it sort of transpired that the Tories have about six deputy chairmen. You know, like when global sports teams get too big and there's just like, you suddenly look at the entourage on the sideline. You know, like at the point where the England football team under Hoddle had Eileen Drury. You go, well, is there a faith coach? That seems an assistant faith coach, deputy faith coach. So, you know, it's been an interesting week for Sunak. Technically, he's come out of it okay, but I think that they're right. I don't think it changes the fact that the Tories are still way behind in the polls and nothing that he can seem to do will rectify that. But yeah, we'll speak about that. We'll speak about Trump. But on the main podcast, I didn't mention any new patrons. So we got a few this week. Remember, if you are a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content for the main podcast. But let's just go through the names here. Greg Campbell. Oh, I just had a horrible thought. I'm not sure I should say it, but okay. All right, you made me do it. Do you call your manly Campbell's soup? Do you call it Campbell's soup when it comes out? I think you can connect the dots there. I don't need to put the words on it. So welcome Greg Campbell as a patron. We've got Mark Bulmer. Oh my God, I'm going to go down the same road. Do you call it Bulmer's cider? I mean, Jeff, you're not retaining listenership with this kind of, this filth. Then we've also got Peter Lee. So welcome, chaps. There are a few more patrons than that have signed up this week, but I'll do those in the middle of the show. We had quite a lot of interaction this week. Remember, if you want to contact the podcast, you can contact me on whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. David Domain is our super patron, so he responded. Thank you for your email, by the way, David. There was loads of great stuff in there. The thing that I always have enjoyed, I get to read all of it, which is great, but the thing that I want to zero in for the podcast is the weather. So as I'm talking, it's Friday today and it's still minus something, right? And then on everybody's weather app, it says that on Sunday it's somehow going to be 12 degrees. And I would say that there's a real plausibility issue with that because everyone I've spoken to has just said it almost contemptuously. Apparently it's going to be 12 degrees by Sunday. Apparently it's going to be 12 degrees. Like, you know, weather, you know, the phrase changes like the weather, yeah? You know that phrase exists because weather can change quite dramatically, but we never really get our heads around it. And I'd spoke before Christmas about the fact that I couldn't chill beer outside, which to me was the first point where I thought, hey, maybe the climate crisis is real. Hey, my beers are coming in at room temperature. What WTF, God? But he says the reason the UK weather is variable with temperatures at winter and weather in general is because the UK is at the junction of contrasting air masses. See, that's what I was saying. I was saying the misses. It'll be the air masses. The attached explains all. All right, brilliant. Fuck, I haven't looked at that. But it explains all. I'd love to tell Greta Thunberg not to worry because, and this is really interesting, I think, a major volcanic eruption, which could happen anytime, fair point, would eject enough aerosols into the upper atmosphere. And by that, like what we would call CFC. I don't think you mean like loads of little cans of Glade Mountain Fresh. It would eject enough aerosols into the upper atmosphere to drop average global temperatures a few degrees for years. She'd probably turn into a volcano herself upon hearing that. Yeah, I think she... Well, I mean, that's a really interesting point to make, isn't it? There's a lot of people. It's like the get the Tories out industry, the old GTTO guys. You do sometimes wonder, you know, once Labour get in, what are they going to do? And if the planet just stops heating up, they would have to think that the world was going to end somehow, wouldn't they? So I think then they'd probably all move on to meteors coming from outer space. That would be the last game in town. They go, well, we definitely thought that would be it. So, but we have tracked a meteor that... look, if we don't all change our behaviours, it's going to hit the world in approximately 100,000 years. Also, going to offer a right of reply thing here. So I took the piss on a previous podcast out of the Dear England play. Well, I wasn't mocking the whole play. It was just there was one scene that they shared and it had England footballers engaged in banter and it was a hard watch. But I got a message from Rachel and she says that she went to see the play and it was great. Okay, so I just want to say that I'm always cautious about ripping on performers, but you know, there's probably a little bit of my show that you could, if you got a 42 second clip there and there was just, I was just asking some guy what he did for a living and someone went, is this it? Is this it? For 80 minutes? Is it, there we go. Is this what right wing comedy is? Is it punching down on a guy because he works in accounts? Yeah, probably. I mean, that is a rule of comedy. We can all say left, right, leave, remain, whatever, but we all agree that if there's a geezer in accounts in the front row, you have to rip the fuck out of him for the rest of the show. So look, Dear England play, by all accounts, Rachel really enjoyed it. And then on that note, Paul, friend of the show, Paul, points out, I made a point that banter is never done well on film, is it? It's a very, very hard thing to recreate. And also people never dance well to music in films or adverts. And Paul makes a really interesting point. Is the reason they're usually dancing in silence is because they're dancing to absolutely nothing because of clearance issues and negotiations. They never have any idea of what track will actually work. Sometimes they get the one they want or for something very similar and the dancing works, but quite often they don't and it doesn't. Well, this absolutely clears it up. I think it's absolutely hilarious, the idea of people on set just being told, all right, we're good to go here. Everything's in place. Just remember, keep sharp. And remember, we need you to dance in a generic way, if that's okay. Something that would make as much sense if we overlaid it with Shabba Ranks as it would if it was Taylor Swift. Okay, action. Okay, of course we're going to do a quick thank you and a fuck you. Thank you. Oh, so I broke the... What a wanker. Breaking the news. Do you know what I mean? Jesus Christ, Jeff. You're doing a podcast in a Travellers. Do you know what I mean? It's not Reuters. So on my social media, I can't think what to say. I announced that I've got a Radio 4 show that's been commissioned. My first ever series on Radio 4 called Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club. So that is going to be something we're doing this year. I'm not sure when it'll come out, but it's going to be something funny. It's going to be about blokes' issues. As I said in the tweet, the channel, originally I pushed back and said no women, but the channel were like, well, we've got to have women. And then, you know, being Working Men's Club, I immediately started talking like a northerner and went, no, we can't have any women. It'll ruin it. It'll be no fun. It'll be no fun anymore. We can't have them in. Just be talking about feelings. But they've assured me that any women that do come will not be allowed to talk about feelings. So that we did reach a settlement on that. And I just thought it was a good point, actually, to do a bit of men's mental health. I haven't mentioned it for a while. And this is always the way, isn't it, with blokes? And then... just like the last week or so, I'm just getting angry. like, I'm not an angry guy as well. It's not within my nature. So it's always notable when that happens. And I was also having, like, quite a few dreams. You know what I mean? Like, I was just... There's one of them where I was literally fighting with a tiger. And, of course, being a bloke, my ego meant that I was actually holding my own. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had it in a headlock at one point. And then there's another dream about a tooth falling out. Do you know what I mean? There's stuff going on. I think that... I'm not that kind of hippy-dippy, but I do think dreams are sometimes trying to tell you something. It's just not exactly clear what. And then so I was just like walking around with it and then just being irritated by things that shouldn't irritate me. And I just said to my wife, I said, babe, I don't know what it is. I've just been feeling really just a bit angry last week. The moment, right? What is it called? I think there's a name for this principle. It's the paradox of acceptance. Right, the moment you admit it, that it's happening, it immediately becomes less powerful. If you concede that you're feeling anxious, you feel less anxious, right? Now, I would always say, and I've always said this, is that the equation is slightly different for blokes. You know, if you're walking around a supermarket and you say, oh, babe, I just need to have a sit down. I've come across all funny, you know? it's a harder thing to do for blokes, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. And so rather than just stomping around your house with a bit of a face on, you could just say, babe, I don't know what's going on. I just feel a bit angry. And she might just go, oh, she'll be surprised. She'll go, well, I mean, look, it depends what else is going on. My wife is very sympathetic. Your wife might be really busy. You're angry. She might have loads of, like, she might be caring for an older relative and toddlers. Oh, you're angry, are you? Oh, Mr. went away on business and sat in a fucking travel lodge, cracking one out for the last 3 days. So you do have to... You do have to know the temperature of the water, but it's worth checking, isn't it? Just to say, oh, I'm feeling like this. Maybe it's not actually anger. Maybe it's something else. Maybe I'm resentful about something or sad about something, but it's manifesting as anger. And let's talk about it. And, you know, I mean, always the thing is, I noticed that I don't drink much in the evenings generally, but I poured myself. This for me is unusual. It's a particularly large glass of beer, right? I got onto a second one. And again, you know, your missus tracks your behaviour. She's like, oh, a second beer. It's like that incredible bit in Airplane, isn't it, where the wife goes, oh, Jim never normally has a second coffee at home. Whereas if your wife pours another wine, you just think, well, are we getting on it tonight? The fuck you goes to Leo Varadkar. I mean, this guy, obviously the liberal press and, you know, the same people that were always giving essentially Nicola Sturgeon a free pass because, you know, I just like her vibes, you know, she's a woman. There were a lot of things about Leo, you know, there were things to celebrate. Of course, I am a liberal, you know, you say, brilliant. He's of Irish Indian descent, cracking. He's a gay man, brilliant. You know, all of that only matters if he does a good job, right? If he does a good job, none of that matters. But you go, all right, if the first person to have this role and do a good job comes from that heritage, great. But we really just need good people doing the job. But anyway, you know, he's all on the trendy issues, isn't he? He's always about being on the right side of history. But there was this, he's come out and said, it seems, right? And I saw this in the Irish Independent. So it's coming from a fairly legitimate news source that he sort of accepted that Taiwan is essentially part of China. He goes, oh, right. Well, just, he said, we accept. Oh, I've got to look this up. Hang about. Right, so I found it. And it's actually one of those things where while I was searching, I was thinking, God, have I exaggerated this? But actually, it is exactly what I said. Leo Varadkar says, we recognise China and that Taiwan is part of China. So I don't know who he consulted on that. I don't know if he went to Parliament, but of course he's at Davos, you know. Who's at Davos this time? I know Rishi, I know the Tories aren't, because let's be honest, they've got a fair bit going on at home. I know that Keir loved a bit of Davos last year, didn't they? When they said to him, you know, when he got back, just buzzing about Davos. He's probably even thinking about getting a holiday home there. You know, you've had a really good trip. You go, I think we should look into getting a holiday home there. You know, just makes sense, doesn't it, in the long run? Come back and they said to him, what do you prefer, House of Commons or Davos? He went, Davos, bitch. So, yeah, Leo Varadkar has accepted that the Taiwan is a part of China. Brilliant. Who needs to actually have a military campaign when you've got somebody like Leo Varadkar just spouting shit? What most people think. Okay, let's get on to, first up, a little roundup of UK politics before we get on to talking about Trump. Right, we use as a jumping off point for this UK roundup is PMQs. Now, I don't know about you, but I like to not watch it go out live, and I like to see the response on Twitter, which is essentially a lot of predominantly left-wing people saying that Starmer marmalised Sunak, schooled him eviscerated him, literally broke him down by subatomic particle levels, and then reconstructed him as a fucking lampshade. You know, the hyperbole is ridiculous. But there was one joke that they particularly seemed to like that a lot of them were sharing was when Starmer, and I'll be honest, Starmer had the best of it, and it was one of the better ones for him. He actually looked like a human being, which is progress. But he said something about the Tory party. He said, it's just, you know, it's hundreds of bald men fighting over a comb. And I thought, okay, first up, that joke has been around, I'm pretty sure, since sort of like the Roman era. I think so. I think genuinely it's been around that long, right? So he's using a pre-existing joke. He hasn't written a joke here. And so if you are going to use that, and everyone's acted like it's the greatest joke ever. Like, oh my God, what a slam. And all. I'd love to gig for the Labour MPs, man, because they were pissing themselves. It was like they'd just seen fucking Richard Pryor and his pomp. But he didn't actually, you need to do a topper. If you're going to take the structure of a pre-existing joke, you need to add something to it. He should have said something. And the worst thing is, it's not even a comb, it's a toothpick. You know, it needed something extra. So I thought that got excessive returns. And then Rishi did a joke about proscribing this terrorist organisation. He sort of furthered this idea that the Tories are trying to set up, which is that Starmer is on the side of the gangs and the terrorists, and, you know, on the side of the bad guys. And Rishi said, we send terrorists home and he invoices them, or he sends them an invoice. And I thought, okay, it's quite populist stuff, isn't it, to align in with terrorists. But then I sort of thought this strategy that Starmer's had for a while, which is like, I've convicted terrorists, I've put down nonsense, I've body slammed rapists. He's sort of taken a lot of credit for cases. Now, as I understand it, some cases he will have selected and said, I want to defend them. And some of them are a next cab off the rank thing. So you get your brief and it's part of the work that lawyers do, right? So when it comes down to the stuff that is prescribed to you, right, there's got to be a rule. He can't take credit for putting away the bad guys, but then, you know, that have been handed to him, you know, cases that he has to take, and then not take responsibility for the other. It's sort of like you either take responsibility for all of it or none of it, if you know what I mean. Like I say, it's a slightly different case where he's sort of taken on a case. But he seems happy to have that division. You know, when it comes to the post office, I don't know anything about it. But nonsense. Oh, fuck it, I get it, mate. And then Yvette Cooper. So we had this joke about the bald men fighting over a comb. And then Yvette Cooper had another sort of extended analogy where she was talking about James Secretary and his bill. And she was sort of talking about it as a tiny bill or a tiny paper covered by a fig leaf. And he sort of goes, sorry, you're saying he's got a small cock? Is that the joke here? Your cock shaming James Cleverly, right? And the thing with James Cleverly is he strikes me as, he's up for a laugh. He sort of played ball and he sort of said, it's a massive paper or something like that. Then immediately social media goes, oh, I see Chloroform Cleverly is up to it again with his gags, his inappropriate gags. I'm like, whoa, who bought his cock into it in the first place? Yvette Cooper was the one that was talking about James Cleverly's cock, albeit euphemistically. Is he not allowed to fight his corner? She's trying to dick shame him here. And I kind of thought it does speak to these double standards sometimes, where there was once when the Daily Mail, it was an incredible shout, but when when there was Theresa May and Nicola Sturgeon were on the front page of the paper sitting side by side and they both had knee-length skirts on, they had a decent bit of leg exposed. What would the Mail say? They were showing off, flaunting, right? And I think they said, forget Brexit, how about Legxit? Which, I mean, you know, pure 1970s stuff. And that genuinely isn't an appropriate way. I should stop laughing. But I didn't think at the time it was appropriate. But I do think that there needs to be a standardised rule here. God forbid. Like if they sort of said, oh, you know, Penny Mordaunt, you know, she's standing there acting like a dominatrix. And that is, I've just pulled that out randomly. That is definitely, anyway, cracking on.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
So then we had Rwanda. Rwanda, I mean, it's one of those, becoming one of those words, isn't it? On a lower level, you know, like people just got tired of hearing about Brexit. Rwanda, it's like one of those words. I'm going to talk about Rwanda. Now, in the event, it was the third reading of the bill in the Commons, and there was a lot of hype, but ultimately little rebellion. Obviously, Robert Jenrick, he stood his ground right to the end. It was one of about 10 rebels. I think the Tories won by a majority of 44. And they've got a working majority of 54, I think. So that's 10 rebels. Among them was, I think, Suella, no surprise there, and Robert Jenrick, who, has anybody noticed that since he left the cabinet, seems to have got himself a little revenge bod. I know that women sometimes, if they leave a guy or get dumped, they will go for it. But I didn't think it happened in politics. But yeah, Jenrick. I always think that just if you call him Jenrick, he just sounds like one of those really cool rappers that raps about conscious issues. Have I said this before? Like, the latest album from Jenrick, winner of the Ivor Novello Award, Jenrick with his new album, Political Revenge Bod. But like we say, 30p Lee is gone. And you know what's funny? What's funny, because I heard an interview with Lee Anderson, and he does shoot from the hip, right? It is that thing, and we'll come on to this with Trump, where you can't help but just not warm to like everything he thinks, but warm to someone who's just clearly saying whatever the fuck is in their head. So he was talking about going into the division lobby, and they were saying, "So Lee, did you vote? Did you vote against the government?" He's like, "Nah, I didn't. In the end, I didn't. I couldn't. I got in there. I was in the no lobby, and all the Labour MPs, though, they were jockeying and laughing, and just fuck them." You know, he's essentially saying, "I wanted to vote against this, but the moment I saw the other lot enjoying themselves, I said fuck that." So he ended up abstaining. And, you know, is it like he just saw his career flash before him, or is it just an emotional thing? I guess emotions have their place in politics. But it carries on. This is what I said at the beginning. It should have been a good week for Sunak, isn't it? There's two ways of looking at that. What happened this week? Because Sunak faces down the rebels in his own party and wins. That's the way you could look at it. But the way that the public, I suspect, will see it is that Sunak has another week trying to fucking, let's carry on with the lazy metaphors, trying to herd cats, right? And this is what happens when the kind of narrative turns against you, is that even the good things can seem bad. It's like you lose all the 50-50 decisions with referees. And it comes down to, like, you know, and I'll come back to this later in the show, is like where I'm at politically. I'm angry at the Tories for how easy they make it for Labour. You know, somebody as mediocre as Starmer could be so far ahead in the polls. So much of it is because of, you know, Tory conduct and party management. And you just remember in 2019, you know, they won that majority. There was a chance. And in different ways, like, a lot of that political capital has been spent, right? And it means that Labour don't face scrutiny. And one thing I want either way, whether it's the Tories or Labour, is I want things scrutinised. Labour are very close to power, and yet they're still able to stand up there and spend that non-dom money. Have you noticed how many times they spent that? They were asked about, I can't remember what it was this week, but it was the toothbrushing thing. They said, well, how much is this going to cost? £9 million. Where's the money come from? Well, we're going to tax the non-doms. You go, oh, right, because, okay, just on the non-domometer, the non-domometer, that'll be the 15th time that you spent that. You know what it reminds me of? Like, because I personally think that if it does raise good money, it'll only raise it once. The super rich will just fuck off, essentially. That's what'll happen. It won't be an ongoing source of revenue, in particular for the government. And it sort of reminds me of when a game show contestant overestimates what their win will buy them in the real world. They go, okay, love, just before we go for Bully special prize here, what will you do with the money when you win it? Well, Jim, we'd like to get, we'd like to have a wedding in Bahamas. We'd like to fly all my family out there. We'd like to get a new car. We'd like to get a house, a speed. All right, love, all right. It's not going to pay for all that. But anyway, all the best. Three darts. And it feels like Labour are doing that. It's the non-doms. And just none of these journalists, well, very few to my mind, are saying, yeah, you already said that. Any other ways of making money? Are you going to grow the economy? What a radical new concept. Donald Trump has won his first big primary, and he won big, at least as big as was expected. Even bigger. I can't do an impression of him, which annoys me. And what it's kind of exposed is that there'd been a bit of chitter-chatter in the liberal mainstream press of, like, Nikki Haley. So Nikki Haley is this candidate. And she's very conservative as well, by the way, but she's... You know, she sounds nice. Nikki Haley. Nikki. Haley. Do you know Nikki? I mean, Nikki and Haley just sound like two top girls that you knew at school. They both sound like really helpful, friendly women. Nikki and Haley. It's a double ticket. She could be her own vice president. And I think that they were hoping that she did well because not unreasonably, they're worried about what Trump might unleash, what a second term of Trump might unleash. But some of them took it so far. I was listening to the news agents. And like I say, I listen to that show, I enjoy it sometimes, it winds me up sometimes, like you guys will listen to this and hear things, but it's well produced and it gives you some insights on the other side. But one thing I completely thought they were deluded about was when they were saying, you know, I'll tell you who the Democrats are afraid of Nikki Haley. Oh, they're terrified of her because she could win. You go, terrified? I mean, Donald Trump, like, one of the biggest plus points in politics is just people knowing who the fuck you are. And everybody in the world knows who Donald Trump is. So I thought that there was an argument that on the left, there was people kind of deluding themselves. I mean, who knows? There are a couple of other primaries that she might do well in. But I wonder, man, I wonder. And then on the right, the equivalent of that was this Ron DeSantis guy, who was very much a product of the online right. You know, so people like stuff that he said on COVID, and there's some other stances that he's taken on kids' education in Florida. But he's a distant second. I think Trump won 50%. And then DeSantis was on about 20, and then Nikki Haley was on 19. So she was in third. And I just thought it just shows that despite everything we know about echo chambers, sometimes we all like heading down there, don't we? Just, because it's warmer, isn't it? We know. And sometimes we go even further. It's not just echo chambers. It's sort of like high-fiving in a hall of mirrors, isn't it? I have to say, from a comedian's point of view, I mean, Trump winning. Look, people say it's good for comedy. It's not good for satire. It's certainly good for him just saying the occasional mad shit that makes you laugh despite yourself. It's worth looking up a couple of things. First up is him rocking up at the UFC, right? So he's in the middle of a court case. I mean, the front of this geezer. So he just rocks up at the UFC and he bowls out with Dana White, the head of the UFC, I think, and Tucker Carlson and Kid Rock. And they bowl out, and this is the thing. I just tried to be honest. It looked cool. It did look cool. They come out, American Badass was playing, which is a Kid Rock track. And as Joe Rogan said on his podcast, it looked like the right-wing Avengers were coming out. Now, you know, it doesn't change the fact that I think Donald Trump is a prick. You know, I do think he's a prick. He's a bad man. But his instinct for what works with people is hard to knock. I mean, just coming out with Kid Rock in the middle of the front of it, the American bat. This is the problem. People think that he's facing down the establishment. It does seem like everything that the establishment does furthers that idea. But the thing that really sort of made me laugh as a pure piece of comedy was a phone call to Macron. It was like a campaign speech, but he was talking about when he was president. He had a phone call with Macron. And of course, he does the usual stuff. He goes, yeah, I was on the phone to Macron. Good guy. Nice guy. Nice guy. I mean, that's one thing that's missed about him, actually, is that for all of his incendiary stuff and his, you know, his hateful stuff and the stuff where he stirs the racial pot quite self-consciously, he also spends a lot of time saying people are nice guys and that he likes them and that he does deals. It's a weird sort of dichotomy. But he said that Macron, there was the French were going to impose some sort of import tariff. And he says, and I heard about this and I rang him and I said, yo, Manu. And then he does this impression of Macron answering that's pure like LOLO. He's like, oh, hello, Mr. Trump, hello. And all the crowd is like laughing. I'm thinking, this is not appropriate, but I'm still watching. And he's like, and I told him, I said, you're not going to slap on any tariffs. Because if you do, I'll put it on champagne and cheese and all your stuff. And he said to Macron, oh, he backed down and immediately removed the tariffs. Now, do I think that Donald Trump will win and could cause a world war? Yeah. Did I think that was funny? Also, yeah. And do I believe that that's what happened in the exchange with Macron? Yeah, 90% I do. You then start thinking about Biden, you know. Biden's got this mountain to climb. And for a man his age, hey, I mean, it's impossible not to do the old jokes, right? I did a joke on news quiz, which is still available, by the way. Thanks for all the positive comments. I said that it's the first presidential race where either of them could be assassinated by an icy pavement. Just old jokes. I'm doing ageist humour. The problem for Biden, right, is it's not just how old Biden is now, but what about in 3 years' time, right? So they vote him in November. Okay, so that's going to go to 2028. He's going to be like fucking older than Yoda by that time. 3 years in, you know, and I personally, it's just my view from what I've seen of family members, people around me, I believe that this man has dementia, right? A moderately advanced, a fair level, all right? So you're saying, well, how quickly will that deteriorate? And that is a real consideration, especially in an increasingly unpredictable world. And, you know, pundits here don't really empathise with what they're asking the American public to do, right? They sort of, you know, they know Trump's legacy, all the charges that he faces, the misogyny, you know, the xenophobia, they know all of that. But they're also sort of missing out that when you're asking the public to vote, they're asking the public to vote for an unpredictable narcissist like Trump, but also for a man who quite clearly has dementia. And bear in mind, they see a hell of a lot more of his senior moments, shall we say. And by the way, this is not digging out people who want dementia. What I mean is, who have dementia rather, is that if that was in your family, you'd think it was quite cruel in some ways, maybe, to put them in that position where they're likely to make more of those. I mean, in fact, you know, if that is the condition that he's got, he's actually doing a fairly good job of keeping a lid on it. But there's evidence there. And to ask the American public to vote, to consciously go in and say, that's your commander-in-chief, that's who's got the codes. And then, you know, they might say, well, you know, whisper, he's not really the one. Well, Kamala Harris, who's actually definitely doesn't have dementia, but is just being weird anyway, right? And they go, well, it's not even a match, it's just an administration. All right, so now you're acknowledging the deep state. Like, there's no real good answer here. And I think a lot of people, you know, Biden supporters and the people that particularly despise Trump are annoyed that Biden is being blamed for economic woes that he's got nothing to do with. It precedes him. But that's happening here. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff, but you cannot deny that what we spent on COVID, right, and the inflation and the impacts of the war in Ukraine have had an impact on our domestic economy. But, you know, the sitting government take the flak for that. That's part of being in power, you know. It's just like with the inflation figures this week, when they went down a lot of people were going, well, it's nothing to do with the government. And then they ticked up a little bit. They go, well, thank you very much, Rishi Sunak. It's just what happens, you know. So it's a complicated position. The idea of another Trump presidency, it does worry me. I suppose for global security, as I've said before, having a guy there who people like Putin and Xi Jinping, if I said that right, they just don't know what he's going to do. And that there's something to be said for that. But there's also a flip side to that of, yeah, foreign leaders don't know what he's going to do. But the truth is, nor does anyone else, right? So that can play both ways. But yeah, I think at the very least, if people are angry at how high Trump is polling, you've got to think about the choice that's being put in front of the American people. Okay, that is pretty much the end of the show. I haven't done the other new patrons. Remember, if you become a patron, you get your name read out with some insults. Ian Wilson. Ian, you just sound like a golf correspondent for Five Live. We go to Ian Wilson now at Carnoustie. Ian Wilson there on the fairway. Yeah, he just came up Tiger. I mean, how poor is that? That's my most go-to golfer there. Oh, any other up-to-date references, Jeff? What about tennis? Yeah, Pete Sampras. What about Formula One? Well, Damon Hill has broken the lap record here. We've also got Robert Black. Robert Black is a cool name. Robert Black. You sound like, you know, like in those 50 Shades of Grey things, you sound like if Christian Grey was the really sexy one, Robert Black would be the guy hanging around for the scraps. Just sitting there, just the world's the keenest wingman ever. And Richard Austin. Richard Austin. You two sound like three divorced men in their 50s going to Vegas. Ian Wilson, Robert Black and Richard Austin. You would crop up on Facebook and go, God, I didn't know you guys had kept in touch. And there you're doing the rock and roll thing, you know, like with the hands. Still got it. Crazy. You know, like a British version of The Hangover. But you know, you don't wake up with Mike Tyson or a tiger. You just lost your passport. It's something very admin-based. Just a reminder then, the tour starts next week. I'm back out. My first show, Maidenhead, on Friday is sold out. King's Lynn has got, first ever tour show in King's Lynn has got tickets available. And then coming up in the first few weeks, out of memory, I've got Stroud, Mansfield, Derby. I think Tring is now sold out. I think Chorley sold out. So if you are wanting, there's 40 dates in total. If you are wanting to come, get on Live Nation and get your tickets just to make sure. And we do have quite a few reviews here. So, of course, if you leave me a 5-star review on iTunes for What Most People Think, I will read it out. Here we go. Always interesting and topical. That's good. Thank you. It's from GTC. Look forward to Wednesdays. Always listen whilst walking. The dog looks puzzled when I occasionally laugh out loud. That's always good, isn't it? Well, yeah, and you should look back puzzled when the dog occasionally just walks around for ages before taking a shit. What is their thought process there? This one is from Will. Will. He says, Jeff talks about the issues of the day with a weekly guest in a funny and relatable way. Worth listening to for the Keir Starmer impressions alone. 5 stars. Thank you very much. All right. Love it. Really interesting and funny at the same time. That's from Eva. I'm not pushing any party political down your throat. Ooh, and it makes you think. Okay. This is from Brighton Fella. I love Jeff and this podcast right from day one. I always save the listen for my drive to work at the start of the week. And this is from, this is from Andrew's cabin crew, and he's made a suggestive comment towards me. Sir. So you can't object. Well, you can, if it's positive. This is from Castle, I think. He calls himself Castle. I've been listening to What Most People Think since it started, and I'm still hooked. Well, thank you very much. I need to think of a name for the people who've been there since the beginning, or there during the early lockdown years. Can you think of that? I don't know what it is. You know, like Cumberband. What's his fucking name? Cumberbatch has the Cumberbitches. What do we need for the most loyal What Most People Thinkers? And this one, is a 5-star from Max and Paddy, but he says that he wished that I would push back more. I sometimes get this. Let's have a look at what he's saying. So when Matt Green was on, he was saying the current policy on immigration was right-wing or words to that effect. Well, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, one thing I would say as a general point with guests is that, as I say, when it's just what two people, it has to be quite a cordial thing. So it's never going to be a, well, you're wrong there. It's not like a hard talk thing. On immigration, it's tricky because, yes, if you look at the numbers that have arrived, there's nothing right-wing about 700,000 people. But if you look at the Rwanda policy, you know, some of the cancellations of various rights that other countries do have, it would certainly seem to the right. I do think that once Labour get in, they'll probably do very similar stuff. But at this point, you've got Tory MPs who think it's too right-wing, and they're Conservative MPs. There was a couple of people that said that Matt said that the party had become really right-wing. I'd literally said to him, no, well, you know, the state has got bigger, taxes have gone up. So I did push back on the general sense that the Tory party had become more right-wing. But I think he said something about Conservative Party members that I maybe should have said something about, so fair point. But my God, when I have a centre-left person called Matt on the show, there's always fireworks. This is from Timmers, who just says, always very good, Jeff. This is from Emma JB. So glad I discovered Jeff's podcast. I found them all funny, interesting. All. This is the kind of unequivocal praise that I need. This not-so-basic bloke balances humour, wit and intelligence in such a fine way. It is quite the rarity. Did you notice there how the more positives the review got, the more of it I read? What a fucking fanny I am. You don't say. Flattery will get you everywhere. This is from Tutlins. I'm imagining Tutlins is a northerner. One of my faves. I love Jeff Norcott's take on stuff, despite the fact I'm a big old lefty snowflake. Well, that voice didn't fucking work all of a sudden. Balanced and funny. Good man, GN. Okay, I think I've done all of them. Thanks so much for those reviews, and I'll be back. So if you do something, look, if you've had a bit too much centre left, next week, Simon Evans. All right, speak soon. Bye. We'll be right back.